Lord, who may dwell in your tabernacle, who may abide upon your holy hill. These words were sung by the people as they prepared to enter the temple in Jerusalem to worship and adore God. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Was the rebuke of the people as they sat as defendants in the metaphorical courtroom of the Most High. The first question hangs in the air as one asked with sincerity and hopeful anticipation that they who gathered at the gates of the temple were indeed worthy of the presence of the Holy One. The second seems to drip with sarcasm and perhaps a bit of desperation for a people who appear tired of such a demanding supreme being. This juxtaposition between our reading of the psalm and its sincere yearning to be in right relationship with God, over against the wearied taste of disappointment that hangs on the response of the Israelites in Micah, appear to be worlds apart. For the people in Micah have been placed on trial by the creator of the universe, and the highest heights and the cornerstones of the earth have been called into witness to the charges that Yahweh will bring against the children of the covenant. The mountains and the very depths of the earth are to act as mediators for this airing of grievances, of this relationship that appears strained to the very hilt, the relationship between creator and created. But in an odd reversal of norm, God begins this cosmic court by not going on the offensive, but instead, God chooses to play defense. Yahweh opens by inviting the people of Israel to lay on the punches, to elucidate the reasons they have drifted from the covenant and why they have become weary of this arrangement. But the people are silent. No charges are brought against the Holy One of Israel, no punches thrown, not even one accusation of wrongdoing. So God speaks and pleads God's innocence. Or better yet, God offers Israel a memory of redemption. God reminds the people who it was that brought them up out of the land of Egypt. God reminds them that they were blessed by God with leaders such as Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. God reminds them of how the deviousness of King Balak was thwarted, and what was to be a curse of Balaam became a blessing. God reminds them of where they crossed over the Jordan and came into the promised land, a land given to them by and through the saving hand of God. It is made evidently clear that they owe their salvation solely to God. It is by the blessings of Yahweh that they are saved, not by their own merit or work. But I guess it isn't clear enough, where the people seem to suffer greatly from some kind of historical amnesia, because they fire back with a question that reeks of discontent and tiresomeness with God. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? And in this setting, this is not an innocent question. It is a question meant to provoke. For before there is even the possibility of a response, the people offer a number of alternatives, always with the intention of bargaining and an ever-increasing absurdity. So it begs the question, how does one get to this point? How does one find themselves with the belief that God can be bought? Perhaps, as the Old Testament scholar and theologian Walter Brueggemann points out, one comes to that point when one forgets the memory of the Exodus. The circumstances become conducive to such an aberration when one does not remember who God really is and all that God has done throughout history for humankind. It is in this state of memory erasure that everything can be reduced to a product, a commodity, a negotiable object. Even our most precious child can become an instrument in the service of a corrupt agreement. Any intrinsic value is lost when one forgets the original story. So, in order to be clear to the people of Israel that what God seeks is not material commodity, Micah proclaims the famous triad, declaring that the God of the covenant wants faithful relationships and solidarity. For he has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? It must be noted that the first two phrases of the triad are foundational in the covenantal life of Israel. For to do justice, or mishpat, is to be sure that the neighbor is well provided for, and to love kindness, or chesed, is to practice a life of reliable solidarity. The two terms, mishpat and chesed, stand at the center of Israel's faith talk. Mishpat most often comes paired with the Jewish term for righteousness, and chesed most often comes in a pair with the word for faithfulness. Any Old Testament scholar worth one's salt can see in this that these word pairings point to the bedrock of the faith. Justice and righteousness, steadfast love and faithfulness. These echo the two great commandments, love of God and love of neighbor. And if we look closely at the last part of Micah's words, we will see that the issue of most concern to God is the absence, or better yet, the lack of justice. Solidarity with God's justice does not permit, does not accept, does not tolerate these situations that so adversely affect the weakest members of society. When God declares what is good for humans, God is doing it from this context and from this raw and painful reality. In the Sermon on the Mount, as a sign of God's concern with the absence of justice, we overhear Jesus blessing the crowd and calling us into solidarity with those whom he names. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek or humble. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. With these words, Jesus speaks blessings on the people suffering right then and there, as well as those who are suffering in the here and now. If it seems Jesus is describing you, take heart, for God stands with you. If you feel like the description just doesn't fit, then for God's sake, find someone to stand with. Sadly, it seems that something that has existed in our society and culture for a long while now has resurfaced in an unavoidable way. This notion that everything, even human beings themselves, can and have been reduced to a product, a commodity, a negotiable object. This strikes at the very heart and message of these words of Micah. It strikes at the very heart of the gospel. So how will we respond to this? How will we be able to walk humbly in such days as these, my good brothers and sisters? How will we live out God's call for mishpat and chesed? It appears we, like the people of Israel, are in need of a constant memory of redemption. We need to be reminded of the saving graces of God and what that calls and enables us to. That we may know in our hearts the answer to the questions posed by the people at the gates of the temple and those in the defendant's chair. That the words of the Beatitudes may ring in our ears on a daily basis. First, to remind us that if we are broken in spirit, or if we feel helpless, that we are blessed by and beloved of God. And secondly, that we are bound in love and solidarity with those for whom this is their present or persistent reality. As Brother Martin said, the two chief things are faith and love. Faith receives the good. Love gives the good. Faith offers us God as our own. Love gives us to our neighbor as their own. And it is for this we have been given. To do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God. Amen.